I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and former host here at PW Torch Livecast. If you're looking for my shows, they have moved as of July 2017. They're now called the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available through Podcast One. Enter Wade Keller on your podcast app or iTunes and subscribe to the new Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, where I cover Raw and my first show of the week, SmackDown, with my second show of the week, and then the flagship edition with a co-host, and we cover a broad array of pro wrestling current events, and then I end the week with a weekly interview. That's the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, now at Podcast One. Subscribe today. Just search Wade Keller.
Blog Talk Radio.
It is Thursday, September 7th, 2017. This is the post-impact GFW of post-GFW Impact PW Torch Livecast here on PWTorchLivecast.com. I am Mike McMahon, as always, with Andrew Socek. And Andrew, I'm not sure how much we're going to talk about the actual episode of Impact tonight. I'm sure we will at some point, but there's a whole lot more going on behind the scenes than in front of the cameras right now.
Yeah, definitely. I know before a month or so ago, we were talking about how Alberto El Patron was kind of overshadowing parts of the show. But man, it just felt like nothing mattered in a way tonight.
Yeah, it was really weird. And let's get right to it. I mean, if you haven't heard the news, Jeff Jarrett out as the chief creative officer. That happened earlier this week with a statement on the GFW website. Then there was a pretty big Sports Illustrated story on Jeff Jarrett's departure, written by Justin Barrasso, and also included tidbits that we'll get to, the major one being that Anthem Sports is already looking to get out of the wrestling business and looking to sell GFW. You could give us a call if you want to talk about all these stories at 515-605-9345. You can also email us, impactlivecast@gmail.com. If you can't get on the phone lines, feel free to shoot us an email. We'll be monitoring that throughout the show as well. But yeah, those are the two big ones, I guess. And let's start with the Jeff Jarrett story, because that was the one that first came out. Jeff Jarrett, it was announced by GFW earlier this week on their website in a statement that he was no longer it didn't say that he was no longer in the role. It said that he was taking an indefinite leave of absence. And from what I can tell, talking to some people that I think would know, the door isn't closed on his return, but there also hasn't really been a date set for it either. You know, this isn't something that I think either party is, or let's say the Anthem side, is looking at it and saying, okay, he's going to be back in 4 weeks. I think the indefinite is the key word in the statement from GFW. They don't know when he's going to come back, and from the limited people that I've spoken to, it does seem like there's a feeling that they don't know whether or not he will come back at all. So what was your initial reaction when we learned that earlier this week that Jeff Jarrett was going to be on an indefinite leave of absence to deal with some personal issues? And I know Wade has mentioned this on his, I think it was on his Wade Keller hotline for VIP members, and then on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast on today's flagship with Sean Radican. But that's what everybody's hearing, is that these personal issues and some family matters, some private family matters, are in fact the reason why this indefinite leave is happening.
Yeah, I was still very much surprised by it. I don't know if I should have been, because this has literally happened before, where he was left the company for a while. It's just so weird. It's hard to get invested in anything because they just keep running into major, major problems like this. On one hand, I feel bad for them, but on another hand, they've done so much of this to themselves, and it's just like you know, we've seen over the years all these fans just leaving the product, and it's hard to just grasp and be excited for anything knowing that at any time, you know, they could just pull the plug on this thing. So it's really maybe unfortunate, I guess, if they, in the long term, if they stay GFW, if they, I don't know, if they don't sell the company, maybe it'll be a good thing to get a different creative team in there. But yeah, I'm not, I don't think things are going to go too well for them over the next few months.
Yeah, they seem to be in dire straits. I mean, I think that, honestly, I mean, I feel like Jarrett didn't give Anthem much of a choice here. If you saw the performance at AAA, at Triple Mania, clearly something wasn't right about that. And again, I don't want to get too into specifics, trying to be as compassionate as we can, but you know, he had trouble getting down the ring steps. His performance in the ring did not appear to be what it was, you know, even a year ago, whatever it was, when he wrestled in that King of the Mountain match for Impact. I mean, there seemed to be issues there. So I know Ed Nordholm was on that trip to Mexico with the GFW talent. He was obviously there. He would have witnessed whatever was happening. I get the impression that he really didn't leave them with much of a choice other than to remove him for the time being. And then, you know, there's been some rumors out there that of some family matters that he's trying to address as well. Obviously, right off the top, from a personal standpoint, you hope that whatever he's dealing with, he's able to get past and is able to move on from and put it in his rearview mirror. From a company standpoint, though, I think you're right. You know, it's really hard to invest in a company where the direction always seems to change. And while this one was sort of out of their hands, and we'll see, I guess, moving forward, how much the direction itself actually changes. They need to get to a point, if they're going to continue, where the biggest story surrounding the company isn't what's going on behind the scenes. Because right now, they're at a point where there's several things that people should be excited about. We've talked about how much we've liked Eli Drake. I mean, there's several things that people should be watching the show for and could be getting excited for, and instead we're not, like I said off the top, we might not talk about the show tonight until the third or fourth segment, because that's not the story, and that's a problem. It seems like far too often, and Anthem's only on the company for 8 months, but it seems like far too often the product isn't the story. It's everything else that is.
Yeah, completely. You know, for viewers, like, you know, you could be excited, like, oh, Jim Cornette's coming in. LAX is heating up. Eli Drake's the champ. But it's like nothing matters. Like, you know, we've been down this road before. Slammiversary almost didn't happen last year. And the entire Billy Corgan and Dixie Carter drama played out. And then Anthem came in. And then it looked like finally they were going to be financially stable for a bit. And now it seems almost worse than ever. And yeah, it's just, it's sad. And I'm very, very curious if this is going to be the end very soon, if those reports of them are just hemorrhaging money are true. Because, you know, we've been talking about them wanting to get that bigger TV deal. And maybe that was a really big blow to them that they were counting on. You know, maybe Jeff Jarrett, you know, tried to convince them that they could get this deal. And then when it fell apart, they just realized they couldn't go on with this company over the next few years. So something big will probably have to happen. And it's just going to completely overshadow anything that happens on TV over the next few months.
I agree. I think that, you know, it's hard really for me to understand what Anthem thought they were buying. They obviously knew that, I mean, unless they just did not do due diligence, they knew they were buying a company that was losing money, had really no revenue streams. So I don't know why it's a big surprise that they haven't been making money now. I mean, everybody knew that TNA wasn't making money before they bought the company. So I don't know. Maybe they were banking on just, hey, we're going to get a new television deal, and that's going to be what puts us over the top. I mean, it seems as though, if that report is true and they are looking to sell, I don't think that it is a coincidence that this news is coming right after we found out a week ago that they re-upped with Pop TV. Because I agree with you. We talked about it last week. That was not ideal. That's not what they wanted to do. So if it's true, it makes sense that, hey, maybe they thought that they were going to get it on a new television network with some licensing fees or some television rights fees, and that was going to be at least enough to make them sustainable. That's not happening. Therefore, they're looking to get out. I think there are some bits and pieces to that SI story that are hard for me to wrap my head around, to be honest with you. I don't know how much of it is – I don't want to rip it apart, but there are pieces in there that don't make sense to me. You know, there was – at one point, it talks about how valuable the GFW or TNA library is, and I don't think it's very valuable. So there's some pieces of the story that I don't think are – adding up. But if they were to sell, if Anthem was going to look to sell the company, I think that you're right. It does mean the end of the company. Because I think when Dixie Carter was looking to sell, she still had such a personal attachment to the company. I think deep down, even if she was selling it and getting out, I think she wanted to see it continue. She would have wanted to see it continue. Anthem, I don't think, is going to have that type of attachment to the company. They haven't owned it for very long. It's not like they've run it for 12 years. I mean, there's no real personal connection that Ed Nordholm or anyone at the Fight Network or Anthem Sports has with GFW and TNA. So if they sell it, the biggest asset the company has is the tape library. Even though I don't think it's worth all that much, I don't think it's worth as much as other people do. And we could talk why. I mean, there's several factors why, but that's what they're selling. Because what else are they selling? Are they selling a TV deal with Pop? It's a barter deal. That's nothing. Are they selling a roster? Maybe. There might be some guys that are under contract, but there's a lot of other guys that probably are working pay per appearance. And so what are you buying? You're buying a company that's losing money. I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of buyers for that. I think if they look to sell, they're going to look to sell the tape library and, you know, there's really one buyer for that. It's WWE. So do you think that there could be a buyer that comes in and wants to run the company? Or do you sort of think the way I do that, hey, if they're going to sell it, they're selling it. They're basically selling the tape library and the company itself is no longer going to exist.
Yeah, I lean towards the latter. Billy Corgan almost bought the company. I would imagine that he is so soured on that experience that he would just not want to pick them up.
Yeah, I agree.
In hindsight, incredibly unfortunate because, just a whole nother wrestling universe is out there with the Hardys and Mike Bennett and everyone still in TNA under Billy Corgan's promotion. But the reality we're in right now, yeah, it is not looking good. And, when WCW went out of business, there was basically one big buyer. Had maybe Time Warner dug a little deeper, they could have reached out to like a Jerry Jarrett or some other people that may have that interest. But in this era, yeah, I don't see anyone else but WWE. I mean, Ring of Honor is not going to buy it. No other promotion that I can even think of would have any use for it. So, and nobody like Netflix, I can't imagine they would want a product that's already dead, to capture like 15 years worth of wrestling. So yeah, it really just comes down to one company right now. And WWE could be just like, well, I'll give you $1 million or whatever. I don't know, maybe even half of that or a tenth of that, who else is going to bid for it? So they are not in a good situation. And Anthem is going to just take a huge loss on this thing, it looks like.
And that's the thing. So, and again, if you want to talk about this news, you can do so 515-605-9345. That's how you get on the phone lines. If you are on hold, you just got to make sure you hit the number 1. That's going to tell us that you want to get on the air. So I see a lot of people on hold. Not everybody is in line to get on the air. So if you are on hold and you want to get on the air after you get put on hold, you just have to hit the number 1. That's going to tell us you want to get on the show. You can also email the show at impactlivecast@gmail.com. But Andrew, yeah, back to your point, there's one buyer. I mean, and that's why I don't think it's going to be as worth as much as people think, because WWE paid $2 million, I believe it was, for WCW. And they didn't just get the tape library, but that's basically what they were buying. And I think some people believe that this tape library is going to be worth more to WWE because it has AJ Styles and it has Samoa Joe and it has some Sting and that's Kurt Angle. I mean, that's all legitimate. That's all true. However, from WWE's perspective, they're the only buyer, more than likely. Mm-hmm. No one else has the ability to monetize that library the way that WWE does. So they're the only buyer. That generally doesn't lead to the price going up. You know, if you're trying to sell your house and there's one person interested in it, you're not going to come out of that deal looking good if you're the seller. You want there to be some competition so it drives up the price. That's not going to happen here, more than likely. So that is, you know, part A of my evidence that I don't think it's going to sell and be worth as much as people think. Part B to that is WWE is cutting expenses left and right. They're not, including down to, we're not using pyro on TV anymore because it costs money. I mean, we've seen them drop network original programming. We've seen them just network shows that were original programming. Just programming has completely gone away. Some of the ones that were really costly to produce. I don't see them being in a position right now to just say, yeah, we'll buy this library for $2.5 million, $3 million. I think that Anthem is going to be in trouble if all they're trying to do is sell the library, because they have one buyer and that one buyer is cutting expenses and would try to acquire this library for as little money as possible, which is what they would do, of course, anytime. But I think now more than ever, where we see them cutting costs with their product, not only cutting costs with the network, I don't see WWE coming in and being willing to cut a big check for this tape library. I think WWE's perspective would be, okay, fine. You don't want to sell to us for $700,000? Go find someone else that wants to buy it. And then Anthem is stuck with either, okay, we get nothing. We close the company down and get nothing back at all, or we sell to WWE for whatever their price is. That's really the position that they're in. They're the ones that need to sell it. They're the ones that need the money. WWE, I think, is going to be able to name their price, and I don't see them naming a high one.
No, nor should they. Yeah, I mean, that's a great point that they're cutting all those different network shows. I mean, in my mind, I just cannot picture going on the network and then clicking on TNA, and you can click on and you watch any show that's ever been there. That just doesn't seem like something that would be of much interest to them right now. Yeah, and just like they just did such a bad job of just chasing off other potential suitors, like Arlux Marketing, I believe it was called, the place where Ron and Don Harris worked at. They were negotiating. I don't think Dixie Carter is going to come out. I don't think her parents are going to give her more money to buy this thing. Billy Corgan's out of the picture. Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff aren't going to join forces to get this thing. Yeah, it's one company that this can go to, and they don't need it. They do not need it whatsoever. If they buy it, are they going to get any more people to subscribe to the network? No. I mean, maybe a couple dozen. I can't imagine there's that many people out there who would just subscribe just to watch old episodes of Impact, and it's really unfortunate, but I don't see this going well.
And that's if they're trying to sell. So, I mean, we don't know. That was reported. I want to talk about the way that GFW handled this news this week as well, because they had a conference call with Johnny Impact. They didn't address it at all, and other than their statement on the website, and flat out said they're not going to address it, which I thought was interesting. We can also get the phone calls. 515-605-9345. 515-605-9345. If you want to get on the phone lines to talk about this GFW news, you can also email the show, impactlivecast@gmail.com. Andrew and I have to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a minute talking more GFW news, especially all the stuff that broke down this week. So join the live cast at 515-605-9345 or impactlivecast@gmail.com. Andrew and I will be back in just 1 minute.
Don't just listen to PW Torch's brand of wrestling coverage. Read it too every day at pwtorch.com. Join me Monday nights for my live coverage of Raw, Tuesday Thursday nights for my live coverage of SmackDown, Sunday nights for my live coverage of WWE pay-per-views, and keep up on the news and read exclusive editorials and special features every day at PWTorch.com.
You know, Andrew, going through the notes that I wrote down here on that SI story, another interesting wrinkle to this that I forgot to bring up in the first segment. According to that story, GFW and Global Force Wrestling, the name, the actual trademark, is still owned by Global Force Wrestling LLC, which is still owned by Jeff Jarrett. So even though they announced a merger earlier this year, it doesn't appear that legally that merger was ever executed. And Jeff Jarrett still owns the name Global Force Wrestling. That, to me, is interesting for one reason and one reason only. Ed Norholm has been spending the last 5 months telling anybody who would listen that Anthem Sports owns the Broken Universe. And we've talked about it at length on the show. I think, honestly, that he's right. I think they do. I think by the letter of the law, if you were to break down the legalities of the contract, they probably do own the Broken Universe. But he's been so obsessed with owning the Broken Universe, yet didn't appear to care about owning the name of the damn company? Like, that tells you all you need to know, I think, about the state of management. When you announce a merger, you've been working for months under this new name, and, oh, yeah, well, we forgot to, you know, have the actual trademarks change hands. Just absurd.
Yeah, I had even forgotten about that. Just, you know, all the other things going on. But that is complete insanity and very TNA-like of them in general. The company would go out of business, but it would be TNA. Well, GFW, I guess, could still survive on somewhere else. Jeff Jarrett, I think, alluded to saying something that he was excited for future opportunities, something along that line. I don't know if he has a plan in mind for what he wants to do, but that blows my mind that they went months and months and months of rebranding this thing. And yeah, they didn't just sign the paperwork like, hey, if you leave this company, then this is ours because we put it on TV for months. Like, that's a completely normal business deal. And they just completely failed to do it. So yeah, this could get really messy.
It's absolutely insane. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm a little conservative from a business standpoint, but you can't let those letters even – you can't allow any of that to be on your TV until all that paperwork is signed. I mean, if nothing else, you think they would have learned from the Hardy situation. You know, when it comes to owning IPs and all this other stuff, they were in the middle of an IP fight with the Hardys over the Broken Universe, and they don't bother signing paperwork to make the merger complete. Now, it's kind of funny because I mentioned that on Twitter yesterday, and Bruce Mitchell, PW Torch senior columnist, responded with, well, that's the best move they ever made. It means that they didn't actually pay Jeff any money for the GFW name, alluding to the sentence that it's, you know, it's worthless. What is GFW? We talked about it at the time. What are they merging with? GFW as a company doesn't really exist. So that's true. I mean, I guess that's a piece of good news. But I just don't know how I really don't know how you go this far and you've got your champions named the GFW champions. You're how do you do that without actually owning the name of the company? It's just insane. I mean, I think it really tells you a lot about the state of the management and just how disorganized things can be sometimes.
And as bad as things are, I guess, for Jeff Jarrett at the moment, in the sense that he's kind of been kicked out for a bit, he has to be the luckiest guy ever to be in wrestling, because TNA would have crumbled without Dixie Carter coming in. So him and his dad didn't lose all their money. He got booted from the promotion. He gets to come back in with GFW and bring his promotion to a national audience. He gets kicked out, and he still probably owns that trademark and can take it somewhere else if he so chooses, which I'm guessing he will try if they do try to sell this thing. So complete insanity everywhere. And it's just like disappointing that we're talking about this, you know, because it just feels like we're in this time loop and it never ends with this company. And it's just not surprising that so many people have given up on it over the years.
Yeah, it's really not. I mean, it's just amazing. But let's get to some phone calls at 515-605-9345. Again, if you want to get on the – well, I see a lot of people on hold, like I said. But if you want to get on the air, you just got to hit the number one when you are on hold. Let's go up first to Cody in Louisiana. Cody, how you doing this evening?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
All right. A little depressed.
Yeah. No kidding. We might be out of a job, Andrew. We're not going to have a show to host if they go out of business.
Oh, I'm sure the fans will get a way to get you guys some new jobs. I wouldn't worry about that too much.
Oh, good.
I do actually have a question about the show tonight, but along with a couple other topics that I want to bring up.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I think it's only fitting that I start this off by saying the same thing that I said last week, which is that even though Eli Drake is now the GFW champion, he still gets the short end of the straw because no one is talking about him right now.
Mm-hmm. No.
And I agree with pretty much everything that you guys said. It's a damn shame. It's a damn shame because you got so much going for this company. You have an up and coming star like Eli Drake, who's your champion. You got other up and coming stars like, Matt Sydal, who's, you know, basically reinvented himself after leaving WWE. And you've also gotten, you got Johnny Mundo to come in. You got strong tag team champions. You got an up-and-coming X Division star. They even announced a really interesting rematch for the X Division championship next week. And yet it still feels like none of that matters because of the whole situation is going on. But, And like you said, Mike, you know, the WWE is really the only one that kind of would be interested in it. And I also agree that they may not even ask for $1 million. They may go for that 700,000 figure that you mentioned. And, but I think that's something that, that optimistically WWE can use to their advantage because, you know, again, they can sell it for a pack of peanuts, or I should say they could buy it for a pack of peanuts pretty much. And then, of course, they can use it for, you know, stuff both in and outside of their television product because they can use that, of course, all the content from AJ Styles, all the content from Samoa Joe because, you know, the way those guys have been working, they're definitely going to be on they're definitely going to make some DVDs out of those and they can sell those. And also, you mentioned the Broken Universe. If that company owned – the Broken Universe and WWE buys it, doesn't that mean that the WWE can use the Broken Universe on their television product if they decide to buy it? And if so, that would be a huge coup for WWE, in my opinion, because of how big it was. I think that the WWE wouldn't have signed the Hardys back if they didn't see something in them that had been growing. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, I assume that they would. If they were to just buy the video library, they wouldn't necessarily own the trademarks. But I'm sure it would be similar to WCW in that they would be buying, you know, Anthem would be liquidating the company, not just the video library. I think in WWE's case, when they bought WCW, the most valuable thing to them was the video library. But, you know, they also got some rings, I'm sure, and they did take on some talent as part of that acquisition as well. So I would imagine if WWE were to be the buyers, if they were looking to sell, again, that's assuming the SI story was correct. If they're looking to sell and WWE were to buy the company, I think it would be similar. They'd probably acquire the trademarks, they'd acquire the intellectual properties, they'd acquire the tape library, and et cetera. So I believe it would be similar, yeah. I can't imagine. I mean, I don't think Anthem. I don't see any way that they could split the assets up and sell them individually. I mean, I know that happens with companies sometimes when they go out of business, but there's not. It's not like there's other major wrestling companies out there where WWE would buy the library and somebody else would buy the rings and somebody else would buy that. I mean, first of all, there's not that many assets to sell. And second of all, there's not that many buyers, period. So, Andrew, are you sort of, I mean, I would imagine that WWE would be purchasing everything. They'd be purchasing the entire company, probably just, when we say buying the video library, I think they would just be utilizing that the most.
Yeah, I think so too. That is a good point, though, about the broken universe. Like, that should be appealing to WWE, because I'm sure they could make quite a bit of money off of merchandise if they got that up and running again. So they should take a look at that, but still, even with that, it probably doesn't increase Global Force Wrestling's stance on that. I'm also curious, it's just kind of popped into my mind, if the company sells, will they be able to sell every episode, or will Jeff Jarrett lay claim to the ones that have GFW on them?
That's a great
point. That could be a whole other, that could be a whole other issue of the past 8 months of TV, or however many months that's been around.
Yeah, I know when they announced the merger, which apparently never actually happened, Jeff Jarrett was being listed as a minority owner. But still, Jeff Jarrett, I would think, would now have claim against, and who knows, but if Jeff Jarrett were to separate himself from the company, right now it's important to note he's still employed. He's on an indefinite leave of absence, but he's still with the company. If Jeff Jarrett were to leave, I'm not a lawyer, but he owns the name. He owns the trademark. I don't see how the company, how Anthem could use the name and use the trademarks without Jeff okaying it and signing off on it. I mean, that's sort of how it works. So that could be a real messy situation.
Yeah.
For me, though, it seems like the only thing worth its salt that has the GFW name is really, to a certain extent, the X Division Championship, because it's been a long lineage of the X Division Championship. Like, you could maybe make an argument for the Grand Championship, but I doubt that too, because, like, first of all, none of the championships mean anything because they're still brand new, and they were merged basically from the Impact Championships with these GFW Championships that basically had no meaning because they had TV tapings that weren't aired until recently, it just feels like it's just a shame because now, once again, it seems like we're talking about the company being on life support and wondering who's going to sell, if they're going to sell or who they're going to sell it to. Also, if they have talent under contract, then depending on the talent, I think it could be a really big, also another nice coup for WWE. So, like, for example, if they have Eli Drake on contract, he could be a really good up-and-coming talent for them to put on NXT. And also, if they have, like, any X-Division guys, of course, like, you know, the Cruiserweight talent needs, some more talent to refresh. So I think that might be something that would be something that would help them. Now, I don't remember if y'all talked about this last week, but it's okay if I ask a question about the Rosemary and Sexy Star incident from last week.
Yeah, sure thing.
Okay, because one thing that I noticed is that the common denominator is not, like, it kind of seems like the common denominator in not only the Rosemary situation, but also the Taya Valkyrie situation is centered not just around Sexy Star, but also centered around Vampiro, who I think is the head of talent relations for AAA. And it just seems really, really odd that both of these situations, of course, occurred with Sexy Star, with with Taya Valkyrie being stripped of her title, even though she won it in a no disqualification match, but was disqualified anyway. But also with Sexy Star, like, seemingly taking liberties onto herself with Rosemary. And I feel like it just seems like nothing is being done by Vampiro, who's supposed to be the head of, who's supposed to be in charge of her. And it just seems like he's letting her basically run wild. And I'm wondering if more of the blame should be focused more on him than it is on her, because Conan himself talks very frequently about his issues with AAA and why he left and why he started the Crash promotion. And then of course, Jericho talks about, how badly, how much of a D-bag Vampiro is in his books. And even though he doesn't really speak in a public forum about it, like using his podcast, but even having Ty Valkyrie on his podcast and having her explain that situation. So, even though Sexy Star is to blame for both of those, at least one of those incidents, my other question would be, especially with the Rosemary situation, should the focus be more on how Vampiro is running the talent, or just leave it like it is, focus on Sexy Star?
What do you think there, Andrew? I mean, my initial reaction is that Vampiro, you could place a little bit of blame on the way the talent's being handled, but ultimately people are responsible for themselves. I mean, especially with the Sexy Star Rosemary incident where she's taking liberties with her opponent, I think you put that more on the individual wrestler than management. But what's sort of your read on that, Andrew?
Yeah, I agree with you. Because we talked about this last week, like nothing like that has really happened in this modern era that I can really think of to that extent. And Vampiro, it seems he did not handle it well at all. But yeah, I mean, it started with her, and he tried to brush it aside, maybe just did not confront it head on. But yeah, I would still just put more of the blame on her. But nobody looks good in this situation.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think anybody really looks good at all, especially Sexy Star, since she's the, like you said, she's the one that she's, especially with Rosemary taking liberties on her opponent. It just seemed pretty odd that Vampiro not only did he strip Ty Valkyrie of her championship, even though you can make a claim that she rightfully won it, but also the fact that Sexy Star did this on his watch as well. Mm-hmm. But that's really all I really wanted to say about that. Now, I do have a question. Like I said, I do have a question about the show tonight, and it has to do with Ty Valkyrie. And, I'm a fan of Jeremy Borash. He's, he has a great personality, and I listen to him sometimes when he's on Conan's podcast, and I was just, growing up watching TNA. I was a fan of him as a backstage interview. But, can you be a little bit more excited that you have somebody debuting on your show? Because, literally, Ty Valkyrie walks out, and the first thing that you hear is JB saying, "She's here." Like, in that almost that exact same tone of voice. Like, no excitement, no exhilaration of having this new star, like this famous woman wrestler from AAA, come onto your show. And it was a good angle for her to be on, too. And it just was not, the announcing for that particular situation was not good either for JB or Josh Matthews. Like, if it was, for example, Don West, I think Don West probably would have been a little bit more excited about that. And I got to tell you guys, I'm a huge fan of Don West. He was one of the reasons why I stuck with TNA when they were on the up and up, because he made me get excited about the stuff that was going on in the ring and the stuff that was happening in promos. But what did you guys think about that segment?
I don't disagree. Whether it's Don West, like you said, or look at the way that Jim Ross would be able to sell things. I mean, I haven't been – the announcing has been better. The announcing has been 10 times better than what it was in the spring when all they did was bicker at each other the entire time. But overall, I think it's probably average at best. I mean, it certainly – I don't think it's adding anything to the show. I don't necessarily think it's taking anything away the way it was before the match at Slammiversary, where Matthews and Borash were just at each other's throats the entire time. But, I wouldn't say it's spectacular by any means. How about you, Andrew?
Yeah, I think I said something to the effect of a week or so ago that Jeremy Borash is always in the range of a 4 to a 6 out of 10. He can never hit those big epic moments like a Jim Ross can, Mauro Ranallo, even like Matt Stryker hits these better, bigger moments in Lucha Underground. But Jeremy, I've noticed this many times. Yeah, Jeremy Borash, just like something big happens, and it's just not reflected in his voice at all whatsoever. And I don't know if he's maybe just not aware of that, or he's incapable of hitting those big moments. But yeah, he's definitely brings stuff like that down, and I would say pretty much a weekly basis, because he doesn't make things feel more important as the show progresses or the things that need to be put over. Everything just has the same amount of passion and enthusiasm, and yeah, he just doesn't hit those big moments that he needs to. And I agree with you. I would take Don West over yep. him or Josh Matthews. Just for somebody who is enthusiastic about the product and can get excited. I mean, Don West did go over the top quite a bit, but he made it fun at times for sure. So I think they're definitely missing something like that.
I totally agree that the announcing is much better than it's been in the past. And they do a good job of announcing the stuff that's going on in the ring. But yeah, like somebody like Don West, who's really enthusiastic about what's going on in the ring. And like, you can tell that he's a huge fan of it. It's just, I was really disappointed when he was taken off the broadcast table, even for somebody like Taz. But at the same time, you miss something like that. Don West was, especially when TNA was up and coming, even before they got on Spike TV, he was one of the reasons why I kept watching TNA at the time, because he was just so exciting. Like, it made me want to be excited for it. And you know, it's a great moment that Taya Valkyrie makes her debut, and even if it served to swerve and crush Rosemary instead, it was a nice debut. But I just didn't feel excited about it because the announcing didn't do it for me.
Yeah, I completely agree, and we're up against another break, so I got to get to a break. But we appreciate the call, Cody, and yeah, I don't disagree with you, and I don't think Andrew does either. There's just, it's very average, I guess, is the best way to describe it. I'm not sure it's been bad. It's probably been okay more than it's been bad, but average at best, I think, is how I'd describe it.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Well, I'm going to let you guys get to your break. Y'all have a good night.
Thanks, Cody. Yeah, you too. All right, so we got to get to another break here on the PW Torch Livecast post-impact show, 515-605-9345. If you want to join us, you can also email the show, impactlivecast@gmail.com. Andrew and I will be right back with more of your phone calls here on the PW Torch Livecast.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
All right, back here in the PW Torch Livecast, going to our next call. There's no caller ID that shows up here, so I believe this is an international call. So, caller, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Mike, Andrew, this is actually Kylan, but I'm guessing Blog Talk is having an issue, so
yeah.
That's probably why my number isn't showing up, but this is the 862 area code.
I was going to say, I know the 862, but yeah, no, it's showing up as all ones here, which usually means it's from Canada or from overseas. So, but how are you tonight, Kylan?
You guys are, but I have one of my usual predictions, which is going to tie into my questions for this week.
Sounds good. Let's have it.
My prediction is that by January 1st, 2018, we will hear that Anthem Sports and Entertainment will officially attempt to sell the TNA and Impact Wrestling library and whatever trademarks they have.
Well,
I
was just going to say, if anyone's a new listener to the show, Kylan has been spot on with his predictions since we started here in January. He predicted that they were going to bring the GFW name on board. He's stuff that at the time, I know we were like, I don't know, we'll see. He's been spot on since the very beginning. So,
if I remember correctly, Mike and Andrew, you guys said that you thought it was virtually impossible for Jeff Jarrett to even want to change the Impact Wrestling name to Full Force Wrestling, and 3 months later, it happened.
You're absolutely right.
I believe that, yes.
So, my question for this week, question number one, if Jeff Jarrett does attempt to take the Global Force name somewhere else, does he call up his good friend Toby Keith, or maybe perhaps a Willie Nelson type, tried to use Toby Keith's alleged connection to CMT to try to get a new deal with Viacom, since he was allegedly very tight with many officials within the Viacom organization, since the Paramount Network may or may not be a possibility.
I don't see it. You know, I don't. Maybe he does, but I don't know if that would have been a possibility with Toby Keith's connection. And Jeff Jarrett is close with Toby Keith, but if connections there would have been able to maybe land a deal with CMT or back in the Viacom family, I don't know why it wouldn't have happened yet. You know, I'm sure that he would have tried to make that happen. I'm sure he would have made those phone calls. And the fact that they re-upped with Pop, I think, tells me that there was really no interest anywhere. But Andrew, what's your thoughts on that?
I'm sure he'll probably try. I know before he was talking with Toby Keith and they were talking about wanting to buy the company, but yeah. Dixie Carter had to be on the air still, and it was this weird situation. So I'm sure he probably will go to him if he's ousted from GFW completely. But it's like, oh God, I hope not.
Yeah, and I guess, why wouldn't he do it now? I mean, I guess that's my thing. That's my point. Like if he has these connections, why would he do it when he was out of the company trying to do something with the GFW name again? Why wouldn't he be trying to use those connections now to build up the brand, before Monday?
I can answer that. Now, I don't know Jeff personally, and I have no connection to him whatsoever. But I think in his mind, he's thinking, okay, Dixie's out, so she has no way of impeding me or throwing an obstacle in my face. I know I own the Global Force Wrestling LLC name, so I see no reason why Toby Keith wouldn't work with me because, unlike last time, I don't have Dixie Carter all in my face telling me she still wants to be a television character and she refuses to sell unless I do something with her.
I think that's true, but, you know, and maybe I'm misunderstanding the question. I thought you meant, would he be trying to do something with Toby Keith if he leaves GFW altogether, or if he leaves Anthem altogether, because he still owns GFW.
That is what I mean.
I don't know why he wouldn't have been doing that already. And again, maybe there's a reason why. Maybe Anthem didn't want to work with anybody on the outside. But, you know, I would look at it and say, if he's working for Anthem Sports and he's running GFW, Dixie Carter's not there, you would hope, anyway, if he's in charge of trying to make the company as big as he can make it, if that's his job, that he would have been trying to make those connections and reach out already. I mean, if you're talking about Toby Keith as an investor to GFW to try to launch or relaunch that brand, assuming he takes it away from Anthem and starts to do something else, then I think you're correct. I mean, I'm sure that'll be an avenue he tries to go down.
Question number two. Since I'm, as I'm sure you are, very surprised that Pop has not yet rescinded their renewal deal for Impact, especially in light of all the information that has come out in the past 3 days. Not that we want this to happen, obviously, but how soon, if at all, do you expect Pop to rescind their renewal agreement for Impact for next year?
You know, without seeing the contract, I don't know. I don't know if they would or if they could. I mean, I remember back the Destination America deal. I think we knew that they canceled Impact back like that summer, and they were still tied into airing the rest of the episodes. And even Spike, I think we knew sometime around October, maybe it was, or September, that they were going to be dropping Impact, and they carried it through the end of the year when the deal was up. So if they've already have something on paper and it's already signed, they may be stuck into the deal. Now, of course, if GFW goes out of business, there's not going to be any shows to air. But I don't know if legally they can take it back at this point. If the offer's already been signed and the contract's done, and that would be really quick. My guess is that hasn't happened yet. But assuming if it has, they might not be able to rescind it. If it hasn't been signed yet, you know, I'm still not sure that they would do it right away, because the show is still bringing in viewers. It's still one of the most highly rated shows, if not, I mean, I don't know what other Pop shows are generating in terms of numbers, but I'm guessing it's one of, if not the highest rated show on the network. So it's a barter deal. It's not costing them any money. You know, I don't really see a reason why they would have to cancel it, just because it's not like they're paying production costs. They're not paying a license fee. So there's no real expense to them. I don't see why they wouldn't just keep it on until it no longer exists. But Andy, what are your thoughts here? Do you think that this news this week could have any effect on what their relationship is like with Pop moving forward? And also, it is worth noting that GFW in a press release earlier this week did tout, if that's what you want to call it, that they've renewed with Spike. I mean, it was one of, I think it was like the fourth thing listed in a press release. So clearly they're not too excited about, with Pop. It was like one of the third or fourth things listed in a press release. So they're clearly not too excited about it. But do you think the news this week of Jeff Jarrett leaving and potential selling could have any effect on what their relationship is like with Pop moving forward?
I had the exact same thoughts you did. Like Pop, I would assume they would want to keep it on TV as long as they can, because it's either that or three episodes of The Young and the Restless in a row. So it's,
Italy or Swedish dicks or the swole guys or whatever they're called, everything else that, yeah, they've promoted.
This could be Swole's opportunity to really make it big, I guess. But
it's a ready-made time slot.
I think they'll keep it as long as they can, just because if nothing else, they would have to fill that TV time. And yeah, like you said, I think the ratings are probably the best on that network, I would assume.
Yeah, and ultimately, I mean, it doesn't cost them anything. If it is a barter deal and they're not paying GFW any money to air the show, they really have no motivation to cancel it. Would be my guess.
And my final question, at least I think, out of the list I came up with, do you find it ironic or even terrible that Global Force Wrestling Management has the sheer temerity to announce that they're going to be launching a global wrestling network in the middle of another firestorm of controversy, knowing that very few individuals will probably subscribe when that the switch is flipped for them to go live actually happens?
That's a great question, because it was something that I wanted to talk about later in the show, too. I don't think that press release yesterday would have happened if the news on Jeff Jarrett didn't break and the SI story didn't happen. I think if those two things didn't happen, that press release is not going out yesterday, because they really didn't give us any details. They announced that they were going to have this global wrestling network, which Josh Matthews or Jeremy Borash had said on last week's episode. There was no new news. There was no launch date. There was no information, essentially, at all in that press release. And they included some other things, too. They included the pop renewal. Like I said, they buried that third or fourth on the list. They included a new TV deal with some places over in Europe. But it struck me as their response to the negative news that was out there, almost as if to say, hey, we're still in business, we're still planning about things going forward. You know, it very much looked to me like it was them trying to say, like, hey, we're not trying to sell, we're still trying to do things over here, we're not bankrupt yet, we're still chugging along. I don't think that press release would have happened at all if the news and the SI story didn't break the couple of days before. But Andrew, what were your thoughts? Did you happen to see the press release and where they kind of announced something without really announcing anything?
Yeah, I did. And it was it just strikes me as very strange. If you remember when the WWE Network was first officially unveiled, like Stephanie McMahon was there, Triple H, Shawn Michaels, Steve Austin, like it was this huge, huge, huge event. And of course, GFW is not going to be able to do anything quite at that level, but you think they could at least do something more than saying, like, hey, it's coming someday later.
Yeah, you know? That's what I mean. There was no information.
Yeah. It's silly, and it's just another long line of silly things that have gone on really in this year. And I don't know if this will ever see the light of day, really. So
yeah,
I wouldn't get too excited for people who are holding out for it.
That's a good point. And I think it was a total PR move to just try to release something to distract people from what else was going on and just make it known that, hey, we're still planning on doing things in the future. You know, that's what it looked like to me.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. Well, we'll continue to swim through the proverbial muck of insanity that is Global Force Wrestling together, guys.
All right.
Talk to you next week.
Have a good one.
Thanks, Andrew.
Sounds good, Kylan. Thanks for the phone call. Yes, we will.
There's three of us in on this together.
We will. We will be here until the end, whenever that is. And it might be, you know, if you believe some reports, it might be sooner than later. So anyway, let's get to another break. And then, Andrew, when we get back, you and I can actually talk a little bit about this week's episode. But there were some other things that we could have gotten to about this news, but we seem to have hit on most of it. So we'll get to running down this week's episode of Impact. So we do get to talk about a little bit of what actually happened on the show tonight. But we'll do that after a break. So we got to get to another break. When we come back, Andrew and I will run down the show, and then for VIP members, we'll have a VIP after show that comes up right after this episode of the PW Torch Livecast ends. But all that is coming up later. So. In a bit, or right after the break, Andrew and I will run down what happened on this week's episode of Impact Wrestling. You're listening to the PW Torch Livecast.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
So it should be noted, we usually do three things on this episode on the Thursday live cast. We didn't set one for this week only because there's so much other news to talk about. Andrew and I were bouncing some emails back earlier today. We didn't want to feel like we were just forcing it in there with so much other stuff going on. And here we are, you know, an hour and 3 minutes into the show, and we haven't even talked about a single thing that happened on the show. So that tells you all the news that there was to cover on this week's edition of the Thursday Livecast right after Impact. So let's run down this week's episode, Andrew, and then we'll get to recording our VIP after show for PWTorch.com VIP members right after that. You need to be a VIP member to hear that, though. That won't be here on the live cast feed. We'll tell you more about PWTorch.com VIP in just a little bit, right after we run down the show. So let's start it. They went to a really rapid-fire matches to start the show, which makes sense when we get to some of the video packages they aired later. But they started the night right away. Petey Williams and Sanjay Dutt, they defeated Trevor Lee and Caleb Conley. I thought this was a decent opener, and my notes in this match, which don't really apply because we saw him later on the show, but I couldn't get over the absurdity of not seeing Desmond Xavier for almost a month. Anytime I've seen the X Division guys since August 17th when he won the Super X Cup has been, where is Desmond Xavier? He won this big tournament on August 17th on the live episode of Impact and then disappeared. And here we are at September 7th, 21 days later, and he hasn't been seen. Now, he was seen in a video package later on in the show. So, but still, why did it take so long to get this guy back on TV? And what were your thoughts on the opener? I thought it was, you know, a decent match. I didn't think there was anything great about it. And they also announced and set up that Sanjay Dutt will take on Trevor Lee in a, I think it was a Falls Count Anywhere match next week for the X Division Championship.
Yeah, to me, it seems like the X Division has already lost any momentum they had after the Super X Cup. It was fun and exciting to see Drago and Ishimori and these new faces. And now we're back to just kind of Trevor Lee being there, but not being taken seriously. And Sanjay Dutt, we've talked about him before, just not being overly interesting as a character. I'm glad to see Petey Williams back, but him facing Caleb Conley again, who has meant nothing, it just doesn't feel as interesting or as exciting as it should be. So yeah, it was fine. I mean, not a huge step backwards for Trevor Lee or anything, but it just feels like he's in this weird holding pattern and nothing really of note happened.
Yeah, exactly. It was just kind of there. then they went to another tag match after a break. LAX beat John Boland and Zachary Wentz in 2 minutes. That wasn't really the story of the segment, though. The match, well, I thought, was a good showcase match for LAX. They just got in and beat a couple of guys up for a couple of minutes and then got a really easy win. But OVE came out on the stage after the match. They had cut a promo on LAX. LAX cut a promo back on them. They set up a match that they said was going to air next week. It was going to happen in Tijuana at a Crash promotion show where LAX was going to defend the GFW Tag Team Championships against OVE. So we're going to see that match next week. It was going to be taped, or may have already, I'm assuming it's already has been taped, in Tijuana at a Crash promotion show. You know, Andrew, OVE, I thought their debut stunk. They've gotten better, they've gotten better since then. But and this probably speaks more to the lack of depth in the tag team division than anything else. But why do they have a title shot? You know, who exactly have they beaten to earn a title shot? Because there's all these other teams that you would think that they would need to go through. Granted, Reno Scum is injured, but you have Garza Jr. and Laredo Kid. You have the Veterans of War. You have all these other guys that you would assume they would have to beat before they would get a shot at the tag team championships. Instead, OVE is beating some jobbers, and all of a sudden they're getting a title shot.
Oh, that, yes, that is a great point. And it just feels way too rushed. Like OVE, they want to get them over as these cool, young, hip baby faces who, you know, could potentially be the top stars in the division. But they're already taking on LAX, you know, just after a month. You know, I mean, where do you go from there then? So this is something I wish they would have held back on for a few months. And, yeah, let OVE win a couple more squash matches and then move on to Veterans of War and all the other tag teams that are there. So, yeah, this kind of it fell flat for me just because I didn't want to see it yet.
After that, they went to a Knockouts tag team match. Sienna and Taryn Terrell beat Allie and Gail Kim. And again, an angle after the match. We talked a little bit about it with Cody earlier. Taya Valkyrie comes to the ring. As the heels are beating up Rosemary, Valkyrie comes to the ring, makes her debut, and then goes nose to nose with Sienna for a couple of seconds before turning around and blasting Rosemary. So she comes in as a heel. Wrestling does this a lot, but the way that this type of segment is executed always drives me crazy. You have the heels, Sienna and Taryn Terrell, just beating up Rosemary. She's on the mat. She's literally just getting stomped. She's no threat at all to the heels because she's getting her butt kicked. And Valkyrie comes down and fakes that she's going to help Rosemary only to turn and blast her. Well, why? She was already getting beat. If your goal was you wanted to see Rosemary get beat up, well, just stay backstage. It's happening. You're like, you don't need to come out. Little things like this always drive me crazy because, like, if you're looking at it from a wrestling standpoint, let's pretend it's a real sport for a minute and you're a heel. Why wouldn't you want to keep that little tidbit of information that you're going to side against Rosemary? Why wouldn't you keep that secret? Why would you come out and blow it in a situation like that where she's getting beat up? You don't need to come out and beat her up. She's already getting beat up. I mean, they've done it this way for years. I don't think it's ever going to change. But every time I see an angle like this, it's that little detail that always just drives me up a wall.
Yeah, that is silly. Like, one of these times I just want the new heel to come in and then just start kicking them while they're already down, so they're already unconscious. So the following week they'll be like, hey, I also saw you joining in on that attack.
Yeah.
It'd be really underwhelming, but more realistic.
Or have Valkyrie come down and do the whole fake thing. She beats up Rosemary, but then turn around and beat up Sienna. You know, she didn't really look like she was siding with Sienna and Taryn Terrell as much. I mean, there wasn't really any interaction there. She beat up Rosemary and then went to the turnbuckle on her own. So if the story is that she's like this lone wolf character, well, then have her beat up the heels too.
Yeah, I really like Taya. I thought she was fantastic in Lucha Underground, but I did not enjoy this segment, mainly, I think, because it made Rosemary look really bad. And, you know, the crowd was actually cheering for her. We've noted before how she's one of the more popular wrestlers in the Impact Zone, but she just keeps getting punked out time and time again on TV. And she finally gets something, and then two heels beat her down, and then she gets tricked, just like Sting always did by Lex Luger. I don't know. It just didn't look good for her.
Yeah. After that, they set up in a promo segment in the ring, Jim Cornette set up Low-Ki versus Johnny Impact to determine a new number one contender for the GFW World title. That'll happen next week. You know, Cody talked about how Eli Drake is being overshadowed by the outside news going on with the company. Eli Drake kind of felt overshadowed on this show to me. You know, they're making a much bigger deal about the number one contender match next week than this title match. And I don't know if that's a reflection on Matt Sydal as a challenger or if it's more of a reflection on Eli Drake as champion. But, you know, they did advertise it throughout the course of the show. They advertised it ahead of time as well, but it didn't seem like – this title match didn't seem like it was getting the attention that, you know, the Bobby Lashley title matches were getting earlier in the year, where the whole show was built around that one match. I mean, there was not that it was lost, but there were things like this here where they're naming a number one contenders match for next week without the title match even happening yet, where it didn't seem like all of the focus was on that championship match.
Yeah, I agree. Eli Drake, I was really excited to see that he was champion, but it's not off to a great start, and it's not really his fault. He's just been booked very – I mean, last week he was in that, like, 25-minute match. Tonight he was in a match that probably went, like, 20 minutes, and we'll get to that in a bit. But, yeah, if it doesn't get over and it doesn't work, you really can't blame it on him, it seems. But, yeah, just kind of disappointing how that's playing out at the moment.
After that, we got her back. Crazy Laurel Van Ness is coming back. She was in a vignette with Grado. Grado called off the wedding because she's Canadian. And, of course, Grado's just trying to stay in the country by marrying an American. So the gimmick here was, and I thought this was actually kind of clever. So Laurel Van Ness went crazy when Braxton Sutter left her at the altar. And now Grado is calling off her wedding. So this is now twice in like a 5-month span that Laurel Van Ness was engaged in getting her wedding called off, and she went nuts again. She smeared her lipstick all over her face. Crazy Laurel Van Ness has been a guilty pleasure of mine. I think she's fantastic, and I'm excited for Crazy Laurel Van Ness again.
Yeah, I am too. I mean, I've been probably higher on these segments than the vast majority of people out there, but yeah, her and Grado together were not gonna work well for very long, so might as well turn her crazy again. It'd be nice if they actually gave her some wins this time around.
Yes,
maybe that's hoping for too much.
No, I agree there. Then they went to some video package, 3 segments in a row of video packages on the GFW guys down in Triple Mania. They showed Jeff Jarrett in these video packages, which they almost had to. He was such a big part, especially the Rosemary one at the end. I don't think they could have edited him out. I obviously didn't show him participating in the match at all, which I think was intentionally done. But they did show him in interviews. They did show him backstage, which he was in his wrestling gear when they showed him backstage arguing with La Parca after the Sexy Star Rosemary incident. But yeah, they showed these video packages on a number of different things. I thought that they did a really good job telling a story between Moose and Lashley. Moose eliminated Lashley in a gauntlet match, and it seems like that's going to be a match they're building towards. I would assume Moose and Lashley is going to happen at Bound for Glory. It just seems like that this was the beginning chapter in a story for those guys. But these video packages were good. You know, we've said it in the past. The way they've done their video packages have always been really good. And if they did more things like this rather than in-ring promo segments to develop characters, I'd be fine with it. I thought all 3 of these, and they some of them were, you know, long. All 3 of these were really well done. They told really good stories. And we can get to some of the context of the Rosemary Sexy Star portion of these videos towards the end, but what was your initial reaction to just the presentation of these videos in general?
I absolutely loved the first one. It was really well done.
With Lashley and Moose, right?
Yeah,
me too.
Yeah, I thought it was just excellent. Bobby Lashley, you know, he seemed very upset with his loss. Jeff Jarrett tried to give an explanation for it. They treated it as if it was real, a real sport, real emotions in play. And it made Global Force just look big, being in that big arena, 20,000 people there, being a part of that. And the way it was shot and lit and edited, just, yes, thought it was excellent. by the time they played the third one, I was a bit like, are they serious? Like, did they time the show out wrong? Did they forget to tape a match? Like, what is going on here? Because it seemed to go on for like 40, well, probably not 40 minutes, but like half an hour.
I think it was about a half an hour. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. But yes, I felt that first one was one of the best things that has aired in Global Force all year.
I mean, it probably wasn't a half an hour of video packages because it was commercial time in there as well. But I think it started right around 9 o'clock, and then it was about 9:30 or so when they started getting to some of the other stuff before the title match. So there was a couple of commercial breaks in between, so probably 8 minutes of commercial time. But yeah, about 22 minutes then worth the video packages, I would guess.
Oh, wow. Yikes.
I also thought it was interesting that the attendance kept growing. In the first video package, they were talking about how there was going to be 25,000 people in that building. And then in the second one, Johnny Mundo said that there was going to be 30,000 people in the building. So it seemed like with every video package, the size of the crowd was growing.
I was going to say the other thing that struck out to me is, as good as those were, I did not think Johnny Impact. I still just don't think he's a very good babyface.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's his cadence in his promos or his weird cockiness or it's something he's doing is just not clicking for me. What do you think about him?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's the delivery, and I think it's, you know, I thought the character he was playing as Johnny Nitro when he was with The Miz was really like a sweet spot for him. It was just that cocky heel. He comes across, I mean, even if it's not intentional, he just comes across that way. So I thought he was presented really well then, and that was probably about 2006 or so. But yeah, I think he's better as a heel too. Then, you know, the last package they aired here on this too was the highlighting the incident between Rosemary and Sexy Star. And they showed Sexy Star just cranking on Rosemary's arm. Then they showed backstage where Jeff Jarrett was trying to fight La Parca. And just officials yelling at each other. I'm still not 100% sure how I feel about this content in particular, because it made it feel like a work. And, you know, hey, maybe they're working everybody, but as far as I know, that was a shoot. She was really trying to break her arm. So I don't really like the fact that they made it feel like a work. It's not going to lead to a Sexy Star versus Rosemary match. It's not, I mean, they are literally inhumane if they try to force Rosemary in the ring with her after what she did at Triple Mania. So I don't think it's leading to any type of match. So talking about it and bringing it up seems a little weird. I mean, I get why they did it, because it was such a big story that they almost probably felt like they had to acknowledge it and touch on it. But just some of the stuff they included I thought was strange. You know, Jeff Jarrett literally shoving and trying to fight La Parca, it looked like, was an odd choice in terms of that footage being picked to air. And it also, you know, might tell you a little bit about why Jeff Jarrett was placed on a leave of absence this week, especially where Ed Nordholm, the guy in charge, was down there and witnessing all that.
Yeah, I mean, if this somehow leads to Jeff Jarrett versus La Parca at Bound for Glory, all is forgiven. But otherwise, it was weird. I was more interested in seeing what Jeff Jarrett looked like at that event, just because that was part of the talk of why he was let go. And yeah, he did look a bit out of shape there. The other thing that strikes me as weird is that they didn't like cut a promo with Rosemary after that and have her talk about the incident. The only thing we saw her was her getting the crap beat out of her. So any momentum, any intrigue.
I'm not even sure she was in the video package. I don't think she was. I mean, they showed the clip of her getting her arm wrenched, but I don't think that she had any sound bites.
That's true. Yeah. So anything that could have gained from that is gone because they put the focus on Jeff Jarrett. So I don't know. Yeah. I wasn't a big fan of it.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the first one between Moose and Lashley, like you said. Yeah. This one, not so much. Then they had a video package on Desmond Xavier, so he is alive. That's great to see. Then they went to the main event. Eli Drake retained over Matt Sydal. He used the GFW title belt to hit Sydal with as he was on the top rope in the turnbuckle, and then got the pin. pretty good match. You know, again, felt like it was probably overshadowed a little bit by them not really paying much attention to it. I mean, even in the match itself, Jeremy Borash is reading live reads for Shop Impact. They took a commercial break in the middle of a title match. I mean, they did a whole lot to make you feel like this title match wasn't important. But Eli Drake, being the type of character he is, needing to cheat to beat Matt Sydal, I thought worked. There's several things happening in the middle of the match where I thought was ridiculous. You know, taking a commercial in the middle of a title match, I think is dumb. Trying to talk about, you know, the fact that What About Bob is coming up next on Pop TV instead of your world title match is stupid. But the match itself in the ring, thought it was good. Didn't think it was great. Thought it was good. Everything also with the presentation, though, was like, come on, guys, get your act together. Like, I don't care what's coming up next on Pop TV in general. I especially don't care in the middle of a world title match that What About Bob is coming. What About Bob is a fine movie, but I don't care that it's coming up next when you have a title match in the ring, and neither should you. Just like I don't care about buying a t-shirt when there's a title match in the ring, and I get it. You're trying to sell your shirts. Find another spot in the show to do that.
Yeah. The entire presentation of this just made it feel so mid-card.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
This could have happened, you know, 2 weeks in a row, 2 weeks ago, this could have happened in the second match on the card, and it would have felt exactly the same as the way it was presented. All the momentum Matt Sydal had from his big win over Bobby Lashley is completely gone. Eli Drake, he's quickly running out of momentum. There's still plenty of time for him to turn it around, of course. But yeah, this just did not feel important. The match was fine, like you said, but I don't know. Having like a 20-minute match or a 15-minute match and then ended with a belt shot for me is always, just a bit lackluster. I wish he would just go in there and maybe squash a few people, get some momentum headed into this title run. But just not a strong way to end the night.
I don't disagree with you there either. I think the belt shot is kind of a weak way to end it. I like the fact – I'm okay with it because of the fact that Eli Drake is a heel and it's – kind of works with his character. You know, he's never been a guy, he's never had an aversion to cheating. So I get it, but like you said, to invest 20 minutes into a match and you're really getting into it and to see it end with something like that does leave a little bit of a bad taste in your mouth.
It's weird because they gave Eli Drake, you know, he really didn't cheat that much in that, that 20 man gauntlet match. I mean, they made him look pretty strong. And then they're like cowering on doing that right now. I mean, Matt Sydal, I mean, to me, you know, go Eli Drake over him. I mean, what does that matter? So I don't know why they're protecting him at this point. But yeah, they're just not, it's like, they're just not quite committing to this title run. It feels like to me.
Yeah. You know, I've always been in the mindset where if you're the champion, if you have a champion, you're booking a territory. If you have a champion and you're not willing to put that champion in a match where you're going to put the champion over clean, then don't put the champion in the match. You know, that's I always think that that works best. You know, if you're not willing to put the guy over and put the guy over clean, then put him in the ring with somebody else and find a system that works. But yeah, I didn't think that this made Eli Drake look particularly strong, especially where he needed so much help from Chris Adonis as well.
I completely agree, and I've probably said it multiple times, but they need to get those two away from each other, in my opinion. Adonis just isn't doing anything for him.
Yeah, I mean, other than acting as sort of like some hired muscle, there's really not a whole lot that's being added to the character right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, but they let Brodus Clay go. Oh, no, Tyrus. Oh, I said his old W.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's not as good as that pairing, so it even feels like a retread of something that even wasn't that great. Yeah. So I would just get them away from each other.
All right, well, that was it for this week's edition of Impact Wrestling. That will be it for Andrew and I here on the PW Torch Livecast. But before we go, we want to tell you a little bit about PWTorch.com VIP. Andrew and I are going to be recording a VIP after show right when we're done with this livecast. That after show is exclusive for PW Torch VIP members. There was over 130 podcasts posted on the PWTorch.com VIP feed last month. On our after show tonight, Andrew and I are going to talk about WWE's decision to move Raw live on Christmas and New Year's Day. We'll talk about the Shane McMahon angle from SmackDown and also react to Alex Greenfield's story on Wade Keller's Pro Wrestling Podcast last week when he talked about working with Shane and the differences between working with Shane and working with Stephanie, which I thought was interesting. But we're going to get into some WWE topics on our VIP after show, which, again, we record right when the live cast goes off the air. If you want to learn more about PW Torch VIP, you're going to learn more in just a minute. But, Andrew, anything you want to add before we get out of here for this week?
No, I guess if you want to follow me on Twitter, it's Andrew, S-O-U-C-E-K, and check out pwpodcast.com. I'm an editor over there putting up new recaps from a lot of great writers out there pretty much every day. Edge and Christian's podcast. Today we put up X-Pac 12360. We'll have Coke Cabana up soon, Eric Bischoff, Something to Wrestle With, and tons of great stuff out there. So check out pwpodcast.com.
You can follow me on Twitter at MikeMcMahonPW. That'll do it for Andrew and I this week. Thank you guys for calling. Thank you guys for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Remember, if you have any questions throughout the week, impactlivecast@gmail.com. Andrew and I will keep an eye on that. We'll answer any questions on the show next week as soon as Impact goes off the air. But before we get out of here, like I said, we want to tell you a little bit about PW Torch VIP, but that'll do it for the show this week. VIP members, we will talk to you in just a couple of minutes right here on the VIP on the PW Torch VIP feed. For you non-VIP members, hopefully you listen to this little spiel and you are willing and want to come on board and join not only Andrew and I, but the Wade Keller Daily Hotline, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, the Fix of Todd Martin, Sean Radican's Wrestling Audio Community, and so much more if you go VIP. Here's a little bit more about PW Torch VIP. Andrew and I will talk to you next week. Soon as Impact goes off the air here in the PW Torch livecast.
PW Torch livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the SE Editor format of the Wade Keller Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Past Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip. No!